Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we're going to talk to our dear Soapbox friend, Brother Larry Pinkney, about the Black Panther movement, historically what it really is, was, and how it's relevant to today, because it's very relevant today. And as we talk about in the interview, we have to live in the present, looking towards the future, and never forgetting about the past. But we want to know about the past that's outside established things, established correctness of teaching history. I was a history major, and I didn't learn about people's history until I was in upper division classes. Lower division classes, it's a history of white men moving from war to war. So stay tuned, and we'll be with our dear friend, one of the very first members of the Black Panther Party, Brother Larry Pinkney. Brother Larry Pinkney, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, my sister Cindy, it's a delight. It always is a pleasure spending time on the soapbox with you. So thank you.
Well, like I said when we were chatting before we started the interview, it's a treat because usually we only have you on once a year at the beginning of the year to evaluate our the performance of our dear leader, President Obama. You, as one of the strongest and earliest critics of the Obama administration, we really appreciate your analysis.
Well, thank you very much, Cindy. You're absolutely right. In fact, in late 2007, I was attempting to warn people about who this man, Mr. Drone Man, Mr. Hope and Change, now Mr. Killless, was trying to warn people about him, who he is, and what he would do. Sadly, I have to say, unfortunately, not only has everything that I predicted come true, he's gone even further in doing things both internally and externally that are really hurting everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's why this topic that we're going to talk about today is so important. We're going to talk about the Black Panther Party. You're a member of the Black Panther Party, and we're very involved in it, and the thing is, we also talked about this fascist police state that we're living in. I laugh; it's not funny, but what are we going to do, right?
Right.
But back in the 60s, the Black Panthers organized something very positive in response to what was going on. Now, here in the 2010s. We see increasing police violence on, like you always say, black, white, brown, yellow, red people. There's very little accountability for the cops who kill or beat innocent people. And you know, everybody's innocent in this police state because of, I believe that most of the crimes are economic in nature. People are just trying to survive living here. And so with the economy tanking, with the rise of the police state, I think that we could learn some lessons from the Black Panther struggle because the Black Panther Party, contrary to many people's perceptions, they weren't a violent, violent renegades. They were people who were organizing to help and protect their communities. So I'm going to let you talk about that because it was so wonderful about this history is that we have many living members who can recount it for us. So, Brother Larry, talk to us about the party. And I find it very interesting that you were affiliated with the Peace and Freedom Party because I'm a member. I just ran for governor with the Peace and Freedom Party. And we nominated, as a matter of fact, Eldridge Cleaver one time to run for president of the United States. So I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm going to stop talking and turn it over to you, Brother Larry.
Well, thank you so very, very much. The fact of the matter is that the original Black Panther Party, and I'm speaking, you know, as a veteran of the original Black Panther Party, which the party was formed, founded, if you will, in October of 1966 in Oakland, California. It rapidly grew nationwide because of its programs in the community and its appeal to just everyday ordinary people. Obviously, the party began, our base was in Black communities, but as I have pointed out repeatedly, the fact is that the Black Panther Party also had very close working and viable alliances with other organizations, progressive organizations, quote-unquote, of the time, including the Peace and Freedom Party that you mentioned, and including Students for Democratic Society, and including La Raza Unida and the Brown Berets, and the American Indian Movement. I could go on and on. The Young Lords, etc., the Puerto Ricans, the Puerto Rican Movement. And the whole point was to come together collectively. Even though we were separate organizations, our objective was to understand that it was our common interest, that really is was at stake then, and in this year of 2014 is very much, very much at stake right now, perhaps more so than ever before.
Yes.
And one of the things that, as a veteran of the party, that inspired me was seeing how people did, in fact, come together and work together. Now, of course, this prompted fascist pigs, and I don't bite my tongue. I have to say it like it is. This fascist pig, Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover, to refer to the Black Panther Party at one time in its history as being the most, you know, dangerous, single most dangerous threat to U.S. security. Of course, one has to wonder how an organization that is engaging in free breakfast programs, which we did, we initiated and started and carried out, free shoe programs, free medical programs, free clinic programs, free programs to bus people to prison so that they could visit their loved ones in prison. I mean, there are just a myriad of programs. We call them survival programs that the original Black Panther Party instituted throughout our communities, working very closely with other progressive organizations. But of course, the corporate stream, so-called news media, I call it the vomit stream media, the lamestream media, the lying media of the time, and frankly, today, engaged in essentially what was a propaganda war to destroy the party, the Black Panther Party, to decimate us physically, psychologically, and really every other way you can think of. The U.S. government engaged in what was called COINTELPRO, COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program,
right,
which came into existence for the purpose of, quote, neutralizing, and that included imprisoning, framing people, putting people in prison, discrediting them, or us, I should say, and doing all that it possibly could, the government could do, in collusion. This was a conspiracy in a real sense, in actuality. One can go to U.S. congressional records and read portions of some of the vicious tactics that were carried out against not only the Black Panther Party, but any who dared to support the programs of the party. So this, I think, today in the year 2014 is extremely relevant. Perhaps more relevant today than ever before, because we now have, you know, this quote-unquote colored guy, this nominally black guy.
Right.
And I say nominally because black is far more than color. Black is consciousness. It means being conscious politically, socially, and culturally. But you have to be conscious. It's not just about color. Anyway, we have this nominally black guy, quote unquote, in the White House, who is carrying out the bidding of the power elite, the national and global power elite. In fact, he's gone far beyond G.W. Bush.
Uh-huh.
Obama is actually Bush on steroids, and today, of course, he's carrying out wars in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Syria, in North Africa, in East Africa, in Ukraine, in all over the world. And this is Mr. So-called Hope and Change,
right,
which, you know, really, and I want to segue back to the original Black Panther Party. We were strongly opposed to the war of aggression that was being waged by the U.S. power elite against so-called Indochina, specifically against the Vietnamese people.
Yes.
And it stands to reason that those of us who have maintained our consciousness must oppose today, in 2014, these U.S. Wars under the auspices of the power elite, the ruling classes, to destabilize and overthrow governments around the world. This, of course, is the same old pattern, but it's even worse today. So I think it's important to learn well our lessons from history. But I want to jump very quickly to some of the actual programs. I briefly mentioned a few of them, but I'd like to mention a few more that we engaged in, meaning the party,
yeah,
the original Black Panther Party engaged in addition to some of the programs that I've already mentioned. We also had free housing cooperative programs. We had food cooperative programs. We had free plumbing and maintenance programs. We had free shoe programs. We had GED classes. We had what was called an intercommunal youth institute. The list is very extensive. We had nutrition classes. We had programs for senior citizens. And, of course, what the party is overwhelmingly known for, and in a sense I wish it weren't overwhelmingly known for, we had police patrols.
About to ask you about that. I forget the gentleman's name, but he was a member of the San Francisco 8.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I interviewed him the first year I had Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, when I was still in San Francisco. I interviewed him because, of course, he was being persecuted for a crime he didn't commit. That was, you know, somebody confessed that he did the crime, but it was under torture. And our now governor, Jerry Brown, was Attorney General of California at the time, and re-prosecuted the San Francisco 8, and they were Black Panthers who were involved in the, I guess it was like an early cop watch program,
mm-hmm,
that was very, like you said, it was very controversial, but it was also, it was something that was necessary, but it was also something that really pissed the cops off. So I was going to ask you about that. And now we have citizen cop watch programs where the citizens take pictures with their cell phone cameras, and many times those cameras have been confiscated, or the people taking the videos have been persecuted.
That's very true. And the fact of the matter, what many people are unfortunately not aware of, not cognizant of, is that it was the party, the Black Panther Party, and I'm talking about the original Black Panther Party, not the so-called new Black Panthers, which has really virtually nothing to do with our legacy in terms of what we're doing. Anyway, yes, the party was the organization that really put an emphasis on protecting the community as much as we possibly could, and at least trying to also raise the consciousness. In other words, saying to people, look, you are a citizen of this country. You first and foremost are a human being. You need to ensure that your human rights are respected. And of course, as you pointed out, this enraged the police departments all over the country, whether it was Oakland, LA, New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Seattle, Washington. I mean, as Gil Scott-Heron would say, it's an endless list that won't be missed, you know. And we have to understand that what has been done today, in fact, what is happening today in the year 2014, is an ongoing repressive situation, because the federal government, state governments, local governments, if you will, have combined under any, basically what is, a police surveillance state. And, you know, you have, we now have things like MDAA where people can be and are being and can be held indefinitely, you hear me, forever without charge, without judge, without jury, without conviction, without even the opportunity to defend themselves. And Mr. Obama, Mr. Drone Man, Mr. Liar, has taken it even further because he now has and has had for some years now a kill list, a kill list where he can kill people without any kind of opportunity for people. And we're not just talking about people who are not U.S. citizens, though it shouldn't occur to them either, or with them either, or against them. But I am talking about U.S. citizens who have been murdered, and just murdered by at Obama's whim. This is a situation that back in the 60s and 70s, the Black Panther Party warned about, and here we are in it. What was the name of the book, Cindy? Was it 1984?
Yes.
I mean, we are in 2014 in a situation now that makes 1984 look like child's play. I mean, it pales by comparison. The vast majority of people in this nation have been so thoroughly dumbed down.
Absolutely.
And this is done deliberately. By a corporate vomit stream media who continues to misinform, disinform the masses of everyday black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. So, I mean, there are very definite parallels and lessons to be learned from what was happening in the late 60s and early 70s as they compare to today. In 2014, we need to learn those lessons, because the only way we can reverse this, frankly, is to, one, recognize it for what it is, two, then do something about it. Don't sit back and just say, oh, wow, you know, it's the price of us not doing something. When I say something, I mean resisting, standing up against this repression by the government, by the police, by the so-called news media. The price that we will have to pay for not doing anything about it will be a much higher price than any price that we would pay for resisting. So I kind of digress, but I wanted to emphasize that the situation today has become even worse. And it was bad, it was horrible in the 60s and 70s. Today, it's even worse. But because they've got this, you know, this nominally black guy who really is nothing more than what I refer to as a neoliberal fascist, who talks one thing, you know, how he talked peace and love and hope and all of this rhetoric, when all the time he was plotting to do the bidding, as he has demonstrated repeatedly, of the same national and global blood-sucking avaricious power elite.
I wanted to ask you a question about Occupy movement. Now, the Occupy movement, Occupy Wall Street, was very large, but it seems like it eventually was, and it didn't take too long, really, if you look at it historically, it didn't take too long for it to become undermined and diffused. But I want to talk about something that you point out in the video I watched. So you were talking about the Black Panther Party, that it was very organized, and it was organized around 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the Occupy movement, of course, I think one of its weaknesses was the fact that it didn't seem to have any organization or vision.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let me say this first and foremost, if I may, Cindy, that the Occupy movement, quote unquote, was a beginning.
Yes.
We have to face it for what it was. And it was a very good beginning. I tend to look at it like a farmer might look at the soil. The Occupy movement was a seed that now has to be watered. People now, one of the things that the Occupy movement did, despite its weaknesses, and it certainly did have weaknesses, but now people know what you're talking about, or at least have a general idea if we use the expression, the 99% versus the 1%. That concept is something that I give the Occupy movement a great deal of credit for. On the other hand, or by the same token, I should say, yes, we do need to be organized. I think we need to be creatively organized. I'm not saying that we have to be or should be organized exactly like the Black Panther Party or the American Indian Movement or, for that matter, any organization was organized back in the 60s and 70s. I am saying, and I am in agreement with you, that there has to be some very critical organization. And we need to be creative about how we do it so that they can't decapitate us. Oh, that's your leader. I'll cut, you know, his or her head off politically, discredit them, kill them, whatever, imprison them. But there are creative ways that we can utilize, which we really have yet to utilize. This leads me to this, what I call fake, phony, artificial left-right paradigm that both the Democrats and Republicans push. I call them the Republicrats. They push this paradigm to keep us at each other's throats, to keep us divided, and they use color as well.
Right.
You know, people who criticize Barack Obama, even if their criticism is legitimate, and there's a great deal of reason to legitimately, or many reasons to legitimately criticize Drone Man.
Right.
You know, but those in this country who criticize Obama are immediately labeled as quote unquote racist or haters, and really it's just the opposite. The real racists, the real haters, and let me add quickly, the real terrorists are in fact the government that is engaging in these outrageous, it's economic apartheid, it's actual physical police brutality, it's the destruction of the U.S. Constitution, which Obama taught constitutional law, so he knows full well that he is obliterating the U.S. Constitution. He knows what he's doing. He's not a fool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's cognizant of what he's doing, and he's doing his job very, very effectively on behalf of those who are his masters, as Malcolm X used to refer to it. He is working and serving the same power elite that George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, et cetera, were serving. He's doing precisely the same thing, only he's taking it even further. And so the divide and rule game is what both the Democrats and the Republicans are using to try and keep us divided. We need to ditch that. We really need to ditch that. It is the 21st century. It is high time that we understand that irrespective of our perceived ideological differences, we had better damn well recognize that our common survival interests are at stake. I'm going back to what we called in the Black Panther Party in the 60s and 70s, survival programs. Well, what we need is a survival mentality first and foremost in this country. And by survival mentality, I mean we need to recognize that our common interests, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow, what is at stake. Nothing else. Our common interests. This is what must come first and foremost. And as Brother Malcolm X said, whatever differences we have, let's have those differences in the closet. Not in front of the vomit stream, corporate stream media, because they'll try to use those differences, to keep us divided. No, let's have our differences in the closet. But when we step out, we need to step out united, fighting and struggling, united, fighting together and struggling together in a common, very viable, very real front. A very real common front. So, we need to learn lessons from our history, as Howard Zinn said, and repeatedly, the late, great Howard Zinn, when he said that a person who doesn't know their history is as if you were born yesterday, and if you were born yesterday, those in authority, those in power can tell you anything, and, as Rap Brown would say, you go for the ghost. You have no way of checking up on it. We need to learn. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No frame of reference.
Right.
For the continued crimes of empire that just didn't start when George Bush and Dick Cheney came to power, by the way.
Right.
What many people would like to believe, that we were a great country until the Bush administration happened.
I'm laughing because, one of the things that I also think is very important in this struggle. You've heard the expression, if I can't dance, I don't want to be a part of your revolution.
Yes.
Well, to me, all that really means is we've got to be able to continue to smile. Struggle on. Fight hard. Struggle on. But keep some levity in there. Because sometimes I laugh to keep from crying.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, life goes on. The day after my son was killed, I didn't go to sleep the whole night, but I was out on my porch and the sun came up and I just told the sun, how dare you come up when my son is dead?
Mm.
But that's what happens. In the middle of our interview, I had to go get my grandson, my 2-year-old grandson, because he was pounding on my door. So I think we have to live in the present with our eye on the future, but never forgetting our past. And that's what this interview has been about. But I just have two quick questions. Maybe one of them's not so quick. You mentioned Malcolm X. What was the dynamic there? We had two black entities, I don't want to say parties, arising out of the 60s, the Nation of Islam and the Black Panther Party. I'm very interested in what was that dynamic like?
Well, the Black Panther Party, we considered ourselves Malcolmites.
Uh-huh.
What people fail to understand, and it's because they don't know, and it's because the media keeps distorting it,
right,
is that Malcolm evolved Okay? He did not continue as a limited, narrow-minded, cultural black nationalist. Malcolm grew and evolved, especially once he got outside of this country.
Right.
And began to see people of all colors standing together as human beings, as we all are. Okay? And then Malcolm became an internationalist. And it was then that Malcolm became, you know, the biggest threat. He had to be, as far as the power elite was concerned, he had to be neutralized. He had to be murdered. He had to be killed, assassinated, all right? Because now his message was reaching out to humanity as a whole, not just black people, but black, white, brown, red, and yellow. I mean, I think of the recent passing of our dear, dear, dear sister, Japanese sister, Yuri Kochiyama. And Yuri was a comrade and dear friend of Brother Malcolm. And it transcends the color game or the skin game, whatever one wants to call it. I call it the color game, the skin game, the game of divide and rule. And Malcolm, you know, the more this brother evolved, the stronger his message of unity became.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm said, I'll work with anyone who stands up for truth and justice and what is right. Now, that Malcolm had, that's the Malcolm that I came to love and to adore. In fact, I actually had the opportunity, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I actually did meet and speak with Malcolm for a few moments, for about 20 minutes, I guess, when I was young, a youngster. I shall always remember that. But anyway, that's what I have to say about Brother Malcolm.
I've met his daughter, Betty.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to hope that he would like me.
Well, I have no doubt that Brother Malcolm, because, you know, that's why they killed Malcolm.
Right.
Because he had reached the point where he would like you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He respected, for example, John Brown. He
right.
began to, and I'm talking about this in a historical sense,
right.
make a historical reference. Malcolm began to extend his hand to all people who love truth and justice. Without that, if you do not receive justice, then Cindy, I'm not receiving justice.
Right.
And vice versa. And that became more and more the message of Brother Malcolm, this brother who had evolved, and he'd gone through some very traumatic and horrible things, but this brother grew. And this is the thing that I respect so much about Brother Malcolm. And what a lot of people don't realize, they like, oh, Malcolm and King, they were at each other's throats. Wrong.
Uh-huh.
Totally wrong.
Right.
They need to check their history. They need to know that when Brother Martin Luther King Jr. was finally released from jail in Birmingham, who was the first person there to hug him? Why, it was Malcolm X. All right, I have a wonderful, a large photo of that meeting. And but there again, this is where the corporate stream media comes in and tries to play us off, divide us. They just lie. Oh, it was Malcolm here and it was Martin there. No, we needed them both. And we needed them exactly when we had them. Lord knows we need them today. But the time has come when we all have to be Malcolm and Martin. All of us. Black, white, brown, red, yellow. All of us have to be Malcolm and Martin. All of us have to be Fannie Lou Hamer. All of us. And I don't care what the color of the gender is. We all have to be those people if we are to survive on this planet of Mother Earth and in this nation.
Well, excuse me. I don't know what's wrong with my throat. The thing about Dr. King is that I hate to use this I hate to use this metaphor, but I think it's very appropriate, that what you call the corporate stream media, they want to whitewash his legacy. They want to make him like only about civil rights and you know, things like that. When he was becoming more and more radical, when he gave that famous speech at Riverside Church beyond Vietnam, linking the troubles, the wars with the poverty at home. And of course they make a day to him, a national day to him. And that day, many parades have military recruiters there, targeting the poor children who come out to these parades. So definitely his legacy has also been, smeared by the corporate media, and not just the media, but the establishment.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, the fact is that I'm so glad you brought up the speech. In my opinion, the most powerful, important, and informative speech that Brother Martin gave was the one you're referring to, which was 1 year before he was assassinated on April 4th, 1967, in Harlem, in New York, okay, where he linked the issues. He linked it together. And that was when it was at that time that essentially he signed his own death warrant, okay, and because he was making it crystal clear to everyone that the war of aggression was not just a war of aggression, but the U.S. aggression that was being waged in Vietnam and in other parts of the world, but it was also a war of aggression being waged against poor people right here in this country. So people tried to, and I say people, let me be more specific, the vomit stream, corporate stream media always wants to hone in on the I Have a Dream speech.
Right.
But they don't want to touch.
Absolutely.
They do not want to touch the Beyond Vietnam speech, which is his most powerful, important, and significant speech, in my opinion.
Right.
As I said, April 4th, 1967. I hope people will go back and read it, because it will send chills through their bodies as they think about those words and relate it to the present, to today, 2014.
As a matter of fact, I'll make sure to link it on the newsletter that we send out about this show. Well, Brother Larry, I just have one final question, and I think this might be an easy one, but also I want to give you an opportunity to give out your website. But the Black Panther Party, what was the, hold on a second, excuse me, what was the, why was it named the Black Panther Party?
Well, the Black Panther Party needed, and before it was called the Black Panther Party, needed a symbol that would really fire up in a good way, in a positive way, stir up. I don't mean fire as in a match.
Right.
I mean would stir up and relate to the dreams, the hopes, the aspirations of just everyday ordinary people. And the image of the Black Panther Party was an image of standing up for your human rights, standing up, no longer allowing oneself to be bent over, one's back being bent over, but standing up and saying, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a human, I am somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And thus the image of the Black Panther Party served very, very well, was very effective. And keep in mind, Cindy, that most of us in the original Black Panther Party were teenagers. When I joined the party, I was 17.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And, you know, when I first joined the party, most of us were 17, 18, 19. Okay? We were young people who believed that we could do something, that we had to do something, and we just weren't going to take it anymore. So the image of the Black Panther Party, even though the party has been physically decimated, physically, I say, its legacy is stronger than ever. The legacy of the party. We just have to make sure that people really and truly understand what that legacy is.
Well, good. And that's why I wanted to have you on today. did you ever think many decades later that you'd still be so strongly in the struggle?
Frankly, to be very, very brutally honest, Cindy, I thought I would be dead 30 years ago. I really did. I thought, even when I was very young, 17, 18, 19, 20, I tended to look at things. I thought that, well, you know what? I'll probably be dead before the next year. And, so to answer your question, no, but I'm delighted.
Oh, we're delighted too.
I'm still here, still fighting, just like you, still struggling. And there are a few of us out there, and there are going to be a lot more, you know, as we reach our youth. When I say our youth, our young people, we need to inspire them. They are the torchbearers.
Yes. Well, Brother Larry, thank you so much for this history lesson and the inspiration to go forward. Can you tell my listeners your websites and things like that?
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you very, very much. Because as Howard Zinn would say, this is about a people's history. This is a people's history. It's our collective history. Anyway, please go to Black Activist Writers Guild. That's blackactivistwg.org. Blackactivistwg.org. On that, you will find my writings. You will find interviews. You will find all kinds of things if you go there. And also, please make it a point to read Intrepid Report. That's intrepidreport.com. I happen to also be an associate editor with intrepidreport.com. And yeah, so go there, check it out. I hope that it will be inspiring. I mean, the struggle goes on. It's hard. It's rigorous. You know, being in the Black Panther Party was not romantic, contrary to popular myth. It was drudgery and hard work, but it was necessary, needed, and I'm honored to have been a part, just a part of it. So, Cindy, my sister, thank you so very, very much, and all power to the people.
Well, Brother Larry Pinkney, we're also delighted that you're still here in the struggle, and we love you here at Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. So thank you for being on again, and we'll for sure talk at the beginning of next year, if not sooner.
All right. Thank you, my sister. Stay strong.
Okay, you too. Power to the people.
Power to the people.
That's our show for today. And as always, I hope that you learned something and were inspired to do something, to always be in the principled struggle against empire. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my sister and assistant, my assistant, Dee Dee Miller, Brother Larry Pinkney for joining us in a special appearance. Like we said, he usually only comes on at the beginning of every year to evaluate the job of our first quote-unquote Black president. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.